end of my journey, I'll have reached the promised land.
The burdens here are heavy, and sometimes they're hard to bear. My feet grow so weary as I travel here and there, but I'm going to a city just across the golden strand. When I
reach the end of my journey, I'll have reached the promised land. That's never been told.
Welcome to another Bible lesson presented by the Hamilton Church of Christ. In 1 Peter 3, verses 10 and 11, whoever would love life and see good days must keep his tongue from evil and his lip from deceitful speech. He must turn from evil and do good. He must seek peace and pursue it. This is the NIV version. And what this scripture is saying is that the tongue is one of the things that can keep us from loving life and seeing good days. The tongue can be used in such a manner so as to be very abusive and to truly cause others harm. It's a small instrument, but has a lot of power, either for good or for bad. Won't you join us today in our Bible study?
It filled my soul to hear the song of praise we mortals sing below. And all it takes, the parting of the wicked, I must onward go. I hope to hear throughout a numbered day the song I cannot know. They sing in harmonious song of Moses and the
As we continue our study in the book of Genesis, we're still in the 10th chapter. And last time we talked about verse 15, which tells about Canaan and his sons. The first two he mentions are Sidon, his firstborn, and Heth. And we showed how that Sidon was the father of the Phoenicians, and Heth was the father of the Hittites. Then in verses 16 through 18, we have the other nine sons mentioned. He speaks of the Jebusite, and the Amorite, and the Girgashite, and the Hivite, and the Arkite, and the Sinite, and the Ardavite, and the Zemarite, and the Hathmatite. And afterward were the families of the Canaanites spread abroad. So these other nine sons of Canaan, along with their brothers, the Phoenicians and the Hittites, were the forefathers of the Canaanite tribes that inhabited the land of Canaan, where the Israelite arrived to take the promised land under the leadership of Joshua. So Canaan and his 11 sons made a total of 12 tribes who were allowed to have the use of the land of Canaan until the land was ready to be inhabited by the 12 tribes of Israel to whom it had been promised by God. So when the appointed time came years later for Israel to inhabit the land of Canaan, one group of 12 tribes, the Canaanites, were displaced by another group of 12 tribes, which were the 12 tribes of Israel. Verses 16, 17, and 18 mention the remaining nine sons of Canaan. The Jebusites were early inhabitants of Jerusalem, Joshua 15:16. The name Jerusalem is possibly a contraction of the words Jebusalem. The Amorites were one of the most prominent tribes, and their name was used sometimes to designate all of the Canaanites, Genesis 15:16. Even though the Girgashites are mentioned frequently in the Bible, their location is not known. The Hivites are also frequently mentioned, and some of their cities have been identified by archaeologists all the way from Sidon to Jerusalem. The Arkites seem to have been located in Syria. The Arvadites lived in Arvid, a port city in Phoenicia. The Zemarites were located about 6 miles south of Arvid in a town still known today as Sumra. The Hathamites were associated with the prominent Syrian city of Hamath, mentioned frequently later in Bible history. And the Sinites are not so easy to know about. They may have been an insignificant Canaanite tribe, but the name is similar to other Bible names, such as the Wilderness of Sin, Mount Sinai, Sinaim, and this suggests that their influence may have been much greater than is commonly understood. The deity is known as Sin, S-I-N, may have originated among the Sinites. It is significant to note that the Chinese people have always been identified by the prefix Sino, for example, the Sino-Japanese War. Of all the names mentioned in the Table of Nations given here in Genesis, it does seem that two sons of Canaan, Sidon and Heth, are the most likely to have become ancestors of the Oriental people. It's reasonable that divine inspiration would include in such a table information concerning the origin of all major streams of human development. It seems reasonable to conclude that it is quite possible that the Mongoloid peoples, and therefore also the American Indians, have come mostly from the line of Ham. Now that the Bible has named the tribes which descended from Canaan, another very significant statement is found in verse 18. Afterwards were the families of the Canaanites spread abroad. The Hittites spread to Asia Minor, and probably the Sinites to China, and very likely the other tribes spread out as well. It is only of the Canaanites that this statement is made, implying that these tribes eventually spread out more than the others. This fact seemed to be demonstrated best in their spread north and east into Asia, and then ultimately into North and South America via the Bering Sea land bridge, which existed during the Ice Age. The next two verses in Genesis 10, verses 19 and 20 read, "And the border of the Canaanites was from Sidon, as thou comest to Gerar, unto Gaza, as thou goest unto Sodom and Gomorrah and Admah and Zeboim, even unto Lasha. These are the sons of Ham, after their families, after their tongues, in their countries, and their nations." Here we are told where the boundaries of the tribes of Canaan were at the time this was written. This was essentially the same boundaries as belonged to the land of Canaan, Exodus 6 and 4. The boundaries of this land were from Sidon on the north coast in Phoenicia, down almost to Gerar, as far as Gaza in Philistia on the southern course, then east and south to the Dead Sea and the four cities of the plains, Sodom and Gomorrah, Admah, and Zeboim. These cities had not been destroyed at the time this was written. Lacia was probably to mark the northeastern boundary, but its actual location has not been discovered at this time. These boundaries of Canaan did not include a very extensive area, but it was from there that the Canaanites spread abroad. In verse 20, we have a notation that Hamites were grouped after their tongues and in their nation. This tells us that Genesis 10, after the Tower of Babel, before there were tongues, but only one tongue. This also indicates that this division by tongues had been made to correspond to families, and that each division could inhabit a country or land where the family could live and work. And finally, that such family groups speaking the same language would become nations. The next verse in Genesis 10, verse 21 says, "Unto Shem also, the father of all the children of Eber, the brother of Japheth, the elder, even him were children born." It seems that Shem is writing this portion of Genesis after he listed the main nations descended from his elder brother Japheth and other brother Ham. Shem then proceeds to name his own family. He knew from Noah's prophecy in 9:26 that his family would be the one chosen to transmit the knowledge of the true God and his promises to later generations. Shem lists his own descendants to the fifth generation in some cases, but Ham's genealogy is listed to only the third generation, and Japheth's genealogy is listed to only the second generation. Shem probably lost touch with many of his relatives, especially as the confusion of languages and the great dispersion of the people at Babel. It is quite possible that Shem did not go to Babel, as so many of his father's family did. It is possible that he stayed near Noah until his father's death, long after the events at Babel. We note in verse 21 that Shem is identified as the father of all the children of Eber and the brother of Japheth the elder. In the day and place where this was written, the children of Eber were probably well known, so this reference to them would be important. It is generally understood that the term Hebrew comes from the word Eber. Abraham was called a Hebrew in Genesis 14:13, indicating that he was a descendant of Eber. So the name Eber is obviously applied in these earlier scriptures to a much larger group of people than to only the descendants of Abraham. There were evidently other tribal descendants of Eber who were not Israelites. Shem is here identified as the brother of Japheth the elder, but no mention is made of his other brother Ham. This may have been out of respect for the elder brother Japheth, or there may have been a more subtle reason for the omission of Ham's name. In the next verse of Genesis chapter 10, verse 22, the children of Shem, Elam, and Asher, and Arphaxad, and Lud, and Aram, five children of Shem are listed, Elam, Asher, Arphaxad, Lud, and Aram. Elam is the ancestor of the Elamites, well known in the scripture as well as in the archaeological monuments. In Genesis 14, 4 through 5, we learn that Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, was the probable leader of the confederacy which invaded Canaan during the days of Abraham. The ancient city of Susa, east of Mesopotamia, was their capital. The Elamites evidently later merged with others, especially the Medes, descendants of Japheth, to form the Persian Empire. Asher was evidently the founder of the Assyrians, but as we read in Genesis 10, verse 11, Nimrod and his followers invaded the land of Asher and there established the city of Nineveh, which was to become the capital of Syria. A number of other cities were established by Nimrod's group. This means that the Assyrian people and culture were a mixture of both Shemite and Hamite stock, which means that they were mixed with Babylonian culture, language, and religion. Arphaxad was in the direct line leading to Abraham. Otherwise, little is known of his descendants. A region known in Syria as Arapachidas may come from his name. Lud probably was the ancestor of the Lydians in Asia Minor. Aram, the fifth son, was the father of the Armenians, the same as the Syrians. These people became a great nation. Their language, the Aramaic language, evidently adopted as the common language for the leading nations of the ancient world, included Assyria and Babylonia. Some of the Old Testament, portion of Daniel and Ezra, was apparently originally written in Aramaic, and it was a commonly spoken language among the Jews at the time of Christ. Now, verses 23 and 24, and the children of Aram, Uz, and Hul, and Gether, and Mash, and Arphaxad begat Selah, and Selah begat Eber. Four of the sons of Aram are listed, but there are no children listed from the other three sons. Little is known of these four children which are listed. Uz evidently was the ancestor to a region in Arabia, which was eventually the homeland of Job in Job 1 and 1, and which is also mentioned in Jeremiah 25 and 20. The other three sons, Hul, Gether, and Mash, are unknown to modern scholars, but were evidently important at the time this portion of Genesis was written. The most important son of Shem was Arphaxad. Although nothing is known of him personally, he was in the line of the promised seed. The only son he has listed is Selah, probably also because he is in the same line of descent. And of Selah's sons, only Eber is listed. Eber is significant because, as we discussed, the Hebrews get their name from his name. Verse 25 of Genesis 10, and unto Eber were born two sons, and the name of one was Peleg, for in his days was the earth divided, and his brother's name was Joktan, J-O-K-T-A-N. In the table of nations given here in Genesis 10, this verse deals further with the descendants of Shem. It is a very interesting verse. Eber had two sons, Peleg and Joktan, of whom Peleg was to be in the chosen line. More about Joktan is given in verse 26 through 30. The evident association with Peleg's name is of great interest to us today. In his days was the earth divided. This is an event that should not be forgotten. Eber named his son to help perpetuate the memory of it. The name Peleg means division. Peleg himself is not distinguished in the Bible for his personal deeds, but he is distinguished because he lived during the time that the earth was divided. And obviously the division here spoken of is the division of the people at the Tower of Babel, discussed in Genesis chapter 11. We've already had a reference to a division in chapter 10, verse 5. By these were the isles of the Gentiles divided in their lands, everyone after his tongue, after their families, and after their nations. And in chapter 10, verse 32, by these were the nations divided in the earth after the flood. These verses are apparently referring to a linguistic and geographical division of people and not to an actual division of the continents. In verse 5, the division is described as after his tongue. If it is ever proved that the earth was once a single landmass and that somehow split apart with the segments gradually drifting away to form the continents, then this verse 25 might be interpreted to refer to such an event. But at this time, the question of continental drift has not been settled among scientists, and creationist scientists have identified a number of unresolved difficulties with the old idea. However, it is not necessary to assume that continental drift occurred in order to account for the populations now found in remote parts of the earth. Migrations in all probability took place across the former land bridges at the Bering Strait and the Malaysian Strait, when the sea level was much lower then than it is now during the centuries after the flood, when much of the earth's water was frozen in the great continental ice sheets, which occurred during the geological periods of the glaciers. But regardless of whether continental drifting occurred, early man knew how to build seagoing vessels and could have easily traveled from continent to continent by water. And there is much evidence that this is what man did, according to some scientists. Although we do not want to belabor the point, it is just possible that the great store of energy beneath the earth's crust, much of which was released when the foundations of the deep were broken up at the time of the flood, provided the tremendous force needed to move the continents apart, and that a further release of this energy took place at the time of the Tower of Babel. If this happened, then the rate of separation would have been rapid at first, gradually slowing down to the undetectable present-day movements of the continents. Although we do not have a definite answer to this question, it seems likely that the division referred to in this passage was simply the geologic division resulting directly from the confusion of tongues at Babel. If something more was involved, such as a splitting up of great land masses, it does seem strange that the account given about the Tower of Babel in Genesis 11 does not mention it. The next four verses, verses 26 through 30, give a further account of the descendants. and Joktan begat Almodad and Shelepah and Hazarmaveth and Jerath and Hadaram and Uzal and Diklah and Obal and Abimael and Sheba and Ophir and Havilah and Jobal. All these were the sons of Joktan, and their dwelling was from Mesha, as thou goest unto Shephar, a mount of the east. These verses list the 13 sons of Joktan, Peleg's brother. These names are for the most part known from this passage only, but apparently they all settled in Arabia. Ophir was associated with a region famous for its gold, and Sheba was possibly associated with the Sabaeans. Both of these were definitely located in Arabia. The writer of this section was probably Shem, and the fact that all of Joktan's sons are listed and none of Peleg's probably indicates that Shem was in close contact with Joktan, and so he had more information about his sons. But it seemed that these names were more prominent in the time when this was written than they have been in later times. In the next verse, verse 31 of Genesis 10, these are the sons of Shem, after their families, after their tongues, in their lands, and after their nations. This is a summary for Shem, just as verse 5 had been for Japheth, and verse 20 had been for Ham. As each of these three sons of Noah are mentioned, it is emphasized that each had descendants which were involved with distinct family units, distinct languages which occurred after Babel, distinct regions, and finally actual nations. A total of 26 nations is listed as coming from Shem, 30 from Ham, not including the Philistines, as noted in verse 14, and only 14 nations from Japheth. This makes a total of 70 basic nations listed here by Shem in his original table of nations. The next verse, verse 32, these are the families of the sons of Noah after their generations in their nations, and by these were the nations divided in the earth after the flood. After the nations had been listed according to their origin, whether from Japheth, Ham, or Shem, this verse is added as a final summary, and it emphasizes again that these nations were the original inhabitants of the entire post-flood world. The term generations, Hebrew toledoth, is used here, the same word used by the original writers of Genesis to mark the book's major divisions, 2-4, chapter 5-1, 6-9, and chapters 11-10, chapter 11-27, and so on. Evidently, Shem had a definite of the genealogy of his two brothers, either in written form or by oral communications from his kinfolks, from which he compiled his table of nations. As we look at the table of nations, we see that there were 70 of these families of the sons of Noah mentioned by name, and it was by these that the nations were divided in the earth after the flood. There may well have been others, but for some reason, only this 70 are mentioned. There is a possibility that the number 70 was selected because of its symbolic significance. It is even likely that because the number 70 is listed here, that this caused later Jewish writers to give such significance to this number of 70. This is the same number as the number of the children of Israel when they came into Egypt from Canaan, Genesis 46:27. Later, after being in bondage for 400 years, when Israel was now God's chosen nation and had multiplied and was leaving Egypt, Moses said to the people, Deuteronomy 32:7-8, remember the days of old, consider the years of many generations, ask thy father, and he will show thee, thy elders, and they will tell thee, when the Most High divided to the nations their inheritance, when he separated the sons of Adam, he set the bounds of the people according to the number of the children of Israel. Ever since that time, the number 70 has been associated with the nation of Israel. Daniel 9:24 says, 70 weeks were determined upon thy people. And Israel's history can be seen in a framework of successive cycles of 70 weeks of years. Israel was led by 70 elders, Numbers 11:16-25. And later there were the 70 members of the Jewish Sanhedrin. 70 scholars translated the Old Testament into Greek to produce the Septuagint version of the Old Testament. In Psalms 90, verse 10, Moses wrote that man's allotted time span was 70 years. The Babylonian captivity lasted 70 years. The city of Jerusalem and Herod's temple were destroyed about 70 years after Herod attempted to murder Jesus. We now bring chapter 10 to a close, in which we learned about the historical document known as the Table of Nations. We're now ready to begin the 11th chapter of Genesis. This chapter tells of an event almost as important as the Great Flood. Here we learn about the Tower of Babel and the confusion of tongues. The flood was worldwide in its effects, and so was the confusion of tongues worldwide in its effect, at least as far as man is concerned. Although Satan was not as obvious now as when he first appeared to Eve, there is no doubt that he was still working very hard to thwart the will of God. As Satan worked on the weakness of Ham's character, he soon gained the following of the Hamites in general, and Nimrod in particular. And we're going to see how that the moral and spiritual decay of Nimrod and his followers actually became a religious force that had been so great that it's been a plague upon mankind ever since. It's been the greatest threat to the kingdom of God, the greatest threat to the gospel of God of any other force ever. We must conclude our lesson at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.
When the